Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm Miss Paralegal, here to talk to you about a talk show on blogtalkradio.com, The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Tune in each Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific. A full hour and a half of politics and everything that concerns your community. The comments, guests, and actions of this show has nothing to do with blogtalkradio.com or its sponsors. This commercial has been sponsored by The Next Phase with Ice and Friends.
Good evening. Welcome to The Next Phase with Ice and Friends, heard Thursday, 7 until 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 5 until 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and 8 until 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We always like to offer this brief disclaimer in the beginning of the show. Any comments and or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views and or opinions of the host, sponsors, or Blog Talk Radio. Our brief description of the show is, this show addresses community concerns in regard to designing ways members in communities can increase their abilities to acquire more income. In addition to that, methods to address increasing political strength and impact will also be featured. Financial enhancement, increasing political strength and impact, improving possibilities for combining efforts with others who have similar interests. All these and more poignant concerns will be approached in an entertaining format. There will be musical segments, interesting guests, as well as questions and comments from our listening audience. If you have any interest in improving situations for our youth, such as STEM and incarceration estimates for minority members of this society or any members for this society, reassessing the significance of spiritual impact, investigating the best possible means of boosting knowledge for improving your health, as well as many pertinent topics too numerous to include in this introduction, just join us as we seek truth on The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Call us at 347-945-7040. That's 347-945-7040. Or you can email us at blakicz.1@gmail.com. Email at blakicz.1@gmail.com. We highly recommend that you consult professionals in the fields we refer to on this show. The information you hear on this show is meant to be a catalyst to encourage individuals to research topics that they find interesting.
We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
We got a change and a change came, bring it alive, Obama, how Khomeini, looking for it in a brand new way, they're rolling in Mississippi, singing them freedom songs, we got a spirit cause our God made it strong. Away with the promise, 30 acres and a mule. Nowhere in it to be so cruel. Standing for the belief like Ali, fighting in an unknown zone. Put away that strife, bring our truth back home. I wish Pop was alive, see the rest of the day when the knees fell down and his kids broke down. Victory in the heart, so amazing where we start. In the midst of the pain, the rain came. Water to feed, preserve the same, and not for the fame. World would last, but I must confess,
I'm free, like I'm.
televised. This revolution, now we ride high, brother. Creeps in the lies for the solution. Open up your eyes, you're free. As a bird in the sky, by the grace of God, I testify.
I'm free, like an eagle in the sky. I'm free, it ain't no lie. The fight and one day we would never see the bloodshed fight and lose. And now we see the color lines of the red, white, and blue fly with no color lines. The reality to the vision of a sweet eye. One trapped at the bottom, now we fly high. And God's not done yet. If sunrise is victory, we never show a sunset. We've paid many years and tears, and thank God we trust, so it's already done. And we don't need a receipt for this one. We can have to bring back. No, we can't.
Like an eagle in the sky. There ain't no lie.
Hey, I want to welcome you to the next phase with Ice and Friends. Hello, Miss Lacey, in the chat room. So glad to see you right there. No doubt about it. That was music from the Crosswalk Coalition. I'm Free. The Crosswalk. The T-H-E-C-R-O-S-S-W-A-L-K. The Crosswalk Coalition. C-O-A-L-I-T-I-O-N on Facebook. Christian rap group in California that my oldest son's associated with. And they do a real nice job with, and I understand that they're also available if you have any events that you would like to schedule them for, or if you would like to have, yeah, any events. Just look up the Crosswalk Coalition on Facebook, and you'll find that they are, to me, a very entertaining group, effervescent, and they have a tremendous talent, and my son happens to be associated with them, and I'm glad that they allowed him to be so. And 99 degrees in West Texas right now, 7:09. The next phase with Ice and Friends. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so. 347-945-7040, and be a part of the show again. I was trying to type in the chat room, and I couldn't do it. Mr. Lacey, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you being there. And tonight, you know, I'm kind of mad, actually, tonight. I'm kind of upset, and but I won't get into that yet. What I want to talk about first is I want to congratulate the First Lady. And by the way, let me kick this off by saying that I'm not a progressive. I'm not a liberal. I'm a Democrat, 100% Obama supporter. And if you want to take me to task for that, then find your way to the phone and give me a call, 347-945-7040. Or you can email me at blakizz.1@gmail.com. and I guarantee you we'll communicate. And if you want to get on with me, we'll have a conversation, because I'm 100% behind the president. Now, talking about Sister Michelle Obama, who went to Cape Town, South Africa, and I found this in the Griot. It says how Michelle Obama has won over South Africa. And bear with me as I provide you with this tidbit of information if you haven't already been apprised of it. Cape Town, many South Africans have a new heroine this week, Michelle Obama. If the national media is a fair reflection of the national mood, it seems that people have suddenly switched from being indifferent to being enthusiastic about the First Lady's presence here. A few days ago, talk about the trip seemed to center on the president's perceived failure to deliver aid, investment, and face time to the leaders of the continent from which he draws some of his heritage. Why couldn't Mr. Obama be bothered to come himself? Many have wondered. So how has Mrs. Obama managed what seems like a turnaround performance? She has sidestepped some of the most controversial issues, such as the problems caused by Africa's remaining dictatorships, kind of like in Libya, a dictatorship, and the question of whether the United States has done enough to end poverty and war on the continent. But she has delivered on her core Africa issues, AIDS, poverty, and education, and she has done it with grace. The same cab driver who was ranting to me about the president's no-show last Saturday was full of praise for her personal charm by Wednesday. Many South Africans feel inspired by her story and humbled by her understanding of their story. There is no doubt that many more are quite simply honored that the First Lady of the United States has bothered to be here. That's important. Frequently, I hear Africans become frustrated that their continent receives so much more pity than it does respect. And let me take a moment right now to recognize Rohit Kashru. This is Rohit Kashru on the Griot, G-R-I-O, and that is a black periodical or a black news media outlet. And you can find the Griot, right? Just put that in your favorite search engine, and it'll get to you, the Griot, and it's by R-O-H-I-T-K-A-C-H-R-O-O, Rohit Kashru, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. This was at 8:20 a.m. on Dateline 6/23/2011. A key moment was her meeting with Nelson Mandela on Tuesday, an icon, a historical icon, Nelson Mandela. From their short time together, a tender image emerged of him reading to his guest. She seemed attentive. Here was a woman from a powerful country, which has a painful racist past, pictured with a father of South Africa's racial struggle. It was poignant. The image resonated in both countries. South Africa is not short of heroic black figures, with Mr. Mandela the best known. There is barely space for another, particularly a foreigner. But this simple picture might have helped Michelle Obama along the road to becoming one here. But despite her trip to the Mandela Mansion, the greatest moment of winning over South Africa might have been a visit to a far more humble setting, the largely impoverished township of Soweto near Johannesburg. And, you know, I'm really, really proud that to say that the First Lady of the United States went to visit in South Africa with former president and historical icon, Mr. Nelson Mandela. I mean, that is phenomenal. The First Lady. Think about it. The First Lady of the United States of America. And that's very difficult. And it's really hardly palatable for a lot of individuals, yet it is the truth. The First Lady of the United States of America, Miss Michelle Obama. As she arrived at the iconic church where she delivered an address to young women's leaders, a crowd marched toward the building, to get a glimpse. They shouted and sang, "Obama, Obama," over and over again. One member of the crowd, made up almost entirely of women, said, "She is everything. She's a woman, she's a lawyer, she's a mother. On a continent beset by problems over women's rights, there's a surplus of heroes and deficits of heroines." Inside, Mrs. Obama seemed almost overwhelmed. She delivered a performance described by more than one member of the congregation as flawless. You know why it may have been flawless? Just me interjecting. It's because it was from her heart. She didn't have to contrive it. She delivered it from her heart. That's why it seemed flawless, because it resonated with real people from a real woman. She delighted many with her perfect pronunciation of African names and her deliberate reference to the historic significance of the venue. The church was used as a sanctuary by children fleeing bullets during the era of apartheid and is still scarred by evidence of gunfire. You know, children fleeing bullets in our streets in the U.S. And that's also shared by, during the apartheid regime there in South Africa. But we don't have apartheid here in the U.S., but our children are still fleeing bullets. Anyway, quote unquote, "It's been more than three decades, but those bullet holes in the ceiling, this broken altar, still stand as a vivid reminder of the history that unfolded here," the First Lady told her audience. One local official who had been in the crowd said she'd clearly done her research. "She showed us that she cared, because that's us. That's us. Cared? Well, we don't have to fabricate. We don't have to manufacture. That's us. That's us. We care, period." Anyway, here, there is a growing amount of personal fondness for the world's best-known black woman. But does this mean that Africa is now crazy for all the Obamas? Well, few officials in African capitals will believe that the First Lady's trip has done enough to counter their view that the president hasn't been there for them. Michelle Obama's tour skirted two democracies of Southern Africa. It avoided what many believe to be the heart, geographically and politically, of this massive and diverse continent. Some feel that if the United States can't and won't do any more for Africa, it should be more direct with people in those countries who might still be looking towards the African-American president for an unrealistic amount of help based solely on his heritage. Eusebius Makista, a respected social commentator, is dismissive of what he believes to be the aim of the FLOTUS trip, the First Lady of the United States trip, an attempt by Washington to pacify African frustration. This is a form of sugar coating, quote unquote, instead of being honest about the domestic constraints of doing more for Africa. "We find the administration symbolically sending the president's wife to Africa," quote unquote. You know, let me make a comment on that statement. You know, I'm very proud for what the First Lady of the United States of America has done by making a trip to Africa. You know, I'm not sure that I know of any other First Ladies that have ever gone to Africa, and maybe you do know of some, but or one or two or whatever. But it's very significant. And, you know, the president, you know, is being attacked from so many different quarters. You know, he's being attacked by a lot of brothers that I've heard on talk radio. Listen to Brother Al Sharpton's show quite a bit, and Sirius Satellite, The Power. Yeah, I listen to that quite a bit. And the brother's being assailed. You know, it's like as if he can split up into a million different pieces and be here enough and there enough and here enough and there enough. And this guy's only been in office 3 years. Can you imagine the expectations and the built-up frustration and the built-up desires for rectification that exists in us and among us? You know, but can – I doubt – it's very difficult, I'm sure, for us to bridle and constrain some of our criticisms due to the fact that he's not addressing the concerns that we feel are so relevant to each and every one of us. Hello, my dear sister India DeClaire, Miss Lacey. This is Miss India DeClaire, my dear, lovely, beautiful sister. And your show is on at 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, I believe. And if you have any other relevant, pertinent information, and if you want to give me a call, says you know good and well, you're more than welcome. So this is huge. This is historical and seriously significant. Thank you, First Lady Obama, and my sis, big sis, Miss India DeClaire. Sure appreciate this lady. I really do. And, you know, sis, it's you and your family. God bless you. And Miss Lola and you know, the whole works, you know. it's always my pleasure. I got a chance to listen in on you for a little bit. They changed my days off, so I don't get a chance to catch you much anymore. I'm talking to my sis audience, if you don't know, Miss India DeClaire. She's a one very, very, very wonderful lady, and she has a tremendous show. And it's much more expert than mine, and I'm very thrilled and honored each time I have a chance. And I'm compelled. I cannot resist calling into her show because she always has any topic that excites me and strikes a tremendous amount of interest in me. Sister India DeClaire, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, and I believe that's 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Am I right, sis? If I'm wrong, please correct me because I want to get it right. No. This just my pride for you, sister, but just very grateful to know you. And it's a network. No. Seriously. And, sis, I know I you changed your sis is going into a whole different thing. You got to check her show out. I really implore you to check her show out because what's happening is that there are those of us who really can restrain ourselves in regard to providing some input into the dialogue and what we've been relegated to was just the input from the corporate media who represent the corporate media. But if you want to hear some representation from what I consider to be alternative, not to be disparaging, but what I am is alternative media. And what sis is, Miss India DeClaire, is also alternative media. And what I we've never met to get, I mean, you know, gotten together on the phone or anything like that, but and Brother Alpha and Sister Janice Graham and there are any number of other ones of us over here on Blog Talk Radio. And what we do by very grateful to Blog Talk Radio to provide us this venue is to provide you a totally different perspective of what you might see on corporate media from the talking heads on a daily basis. And, yes, she said that galvanizing the dialogue, I mean, her mastery is phenomenal. God, let me stop. Let me stop. But since I'll be back, I'm going. I gotta pull up this other couple of things that I wanted to discuss. I wanted to talk about Brother Al Sharpton. I got a chance to holler at his show the other day, and I'm really proud to hear him doing some of the things. He's there's going to be, since you know about this march that's getting ready to happen up as a commemoration for Martin Luther King's monument statue. You know, as I understand that there are two statues statue doesn't really fully describe, give credence to this exhibit that's been dedicated to the minister, Pastor Martin Luther King. But there are, I think, George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And, yes, the MLK statue Yeah, that trip is historic. Absolutely. Sis was talking about in the chat room talking. Sis India Declare was talking about. I declare. I just caught that. That's her. That's the. Sis, put your email or whatever that is in there. And she also has a blog. And but I have to do this commercial for her because I just am very appreciative of her. I'm on once a week. She's on 5 days a week. And during the daytime, when you have a great time to get a listen to her. But anyway, let me get back with the talking about Reverend Al Sharpton and what he's doing with the National Action Network. And you know, I find a lot of people take issue with Reverend Al Sharpton and his efforts. You know, unselfish efforts. And he tries to address so many different people in so many different ways and provide assistance and information and direction and support. And he's, you know, we're what I see happening is that we as a culture, you know, although we have to coalesce amongst ourselves, but we are still reaching out to any other culture or ethnic group that has a real and true understanding of our struggle and wants to be a part of what we do, I think, culturally or you know, where that we maintain our autonomy. Other cultures maintain their autonomy because there are certain cultural things that have to be passed down generation to generation to generation that provide counter historical representation for us as a culture, people of African descent. And Brother Al Sharpton does that very eloquently, as does my dear sis, Miss India Declare. I declare, as my brother Alpha, and also Sister Janice Grant, Sister Navazar, and a few other individuals that I will mention a little bit later on in the show. Anyway, let me get back to this right quick. And like I said, if you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so. And that number is 347-945-7040. And the next issue that I wanted to address in talking about Sister Michelle Obama and speaking to the women in Africa and people I'm sure that I'm not on any intellectual level that I'm moderate in elementary to most, but there are some things that stick out in my mind that I'd like to share with you my perspective. The Supreme Court sides with Walmart in sex bias case, and there are those of us out here who don't feel that it's important that we vote. See, voting is just a tool. Oh, well, you know, it's only, why are you going to vote? You know, voting, well, it's just a tool. It's just an arrow in my quiver. It's just one more thing that I can do along with the doing this, along with the talking in the barbershop or talking at church or talking on the corner, talking to my friends or whomever else, because I feel as though we need to, if there's never, ever been a point in history that we need to come together and find reasons to find similarities rather than differences, there has never been a time like today, especially because our communities were, to a degree, split up. You know, we had a, you know, and you know, to me, there was a thing, the segregation, integration thing, and the communities, yes, absolutely, were segregated. And that was a way to control the population of the minority communities, minority being us, specifically of African descent, and some other minority groups, not to neglect them and as I mentioned things. However, integration is what was offered instead of equality, and it was a trick. It was almost like a Jedi mind game. Or we'll offer you integration, and that way we can get used to you, and that way we can allow you to, you know, gravitate up into the structure, different corporate structures and so forth. And then we'll make sure that we're going to include you, and what we'll do is we'll have some affirmative action for you, we'll have some quotas for you, And, you know, I didn't need integration. I could care less. I mean, segregation is cool with me. Just make it equal. You know, equality is all I'm looking for. And one of the reasons that I will tell you that I'm 100% for equality is, let me just share this little tidbit with you, and it'll give you my perspective. And a lot of brothers and sisters, you know, they have disagreements with me in this regard, but I'm going to say this. The opening of the United States Declaration of Independence, written by Thomas Jefferson in 1776, states as follows: "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." Let me just repeat this for your to emphasize, to be a little bit more emphatic. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, it didn't say what color, how tall, it didn't say what your hair looked, it said, and if you honor the Constitution, you salute the flag, you would be somewhat hypocritical if you didn't realize, accept, respect, and appreciate the gravity, in my opinion, of these words. All men are created equal. So, you know, whenever you, you know, I've had different discussions with different individuals about different things, and, you know, people tell me, well, we were just three-fifths. I said, I've never been. My grandfather, great-grandfather, none of us were three-fifths. Well, that's what they consider. I don't care what you consider. It makes me no difference what you consider. Your consideration is the least of my concern. What you do is you live by the words that you write. You want to live by the Bible, you read the words in the Bible. Don't give me an interpretation of what men are. Men, it's very distinct. There's only one determinant, and that's anatomical. It doesn't matter how somebody thinks that they're a man. It doesn't matter how somebody looks at their man. Anatomically. Physically is what determines a differentiation between manhood and any other aspect of gender, as far as I know. And if there are those more well-educated than I, please apprise me of this information, because you don't have a problem. Just give me a call. I check the switchboard. Don't get anxious if you give me a call and I don't answer right away. 347-945-7040. You can straighten me out. 347-945-7040, and just straighten me out. Anyway, the Supreme Court, this is a story I found in the Huffington Post. Supreme Court sides with Walmart in sex bias case. And let me see, I'm trying to see who the writer was. I can tell you that it was first posted on the 20th of 2011 at 10:30, updated on the 21st at 12:45 p.m., and I don't see who the writer is, so I would like to give the props to this writer, but I'm not sure. So I'll go ahead and, Associated Press, Washington Associated Press. The Supreme Court on Monday blocked a massive sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart on behalf of female employees in a decision that makes it harder to mount a large-scale bias claims against the nation's biggest companies. Not just Walmart, but biggest companies, considering that Scalia and Thomas, you know, they've been closely associated with, quote-unquote, the, what's that movement, the teabaggers or something like that. But anyway, and Thomas, if I'm not mistaken, is close to being impeachable. The justices all agreed that the lawsuit against Walmart Incorporated could not proceed as a class action in its current form. Maybe they can reformulate it and resubmit it. Hopefully they can. Reversing a decision by the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco by a 5-4 vote along ideological lines. So you see, well, let me finish. The court said there were too many women in too many jobs at Walmart to wrap into one lawsuit. What I want to say here is this is a 5-4 vote. President Obama, when elected in 2012, will be in the position, if he has a Congress that is of the same mindset, not these obstructionist Republicans. See, you can vote these Republicans. Boehner is nothing. You can vote Boehner into the minority, or even you can vote him out of Congress. You can vote Cantor out of Congress. But it's going to take a committed and concerted effort, determined, tenacious, and relentless effort to get out the vote and be make sure that the rules in your state are that you understand what they are. That's what we need is people who are going to make sure that everyone is apprised of all the rules about voter the voter rights and so forth. Because what they're trying to do is to change the voter nullify the opportunities for a lot of individuals, especially minorities, in regard to electing officials coming up in the future. So please be aware. And not only is the Supreme Court going to be significant, but it's also going to be significant about what's going to get cut and our taxes going to get raised on the more wealthy individuals who are better suited because they benefited more tremendously during the last traverses that occurred. And as far as Wall Street, the money changers is what I call them. And Jesus kicked the money changers out of the temple, the money changers. And you know what I'm saying. The justices all agree that the lawsuit against Walmart Stores Incorporated could not proceed as a class action in its current form, reversing the decision by the Ninth. So I already read that part. The lawsuit could have involved up to 1.6 million women, with Walmart facing potentially billions of dollars in damages. Do you know, just the last time I checked, I think there are 15 Walmart siblings, or whatever you call them. But anyway, they are worth $80 billion together. Just those 15, if I'm not mistaken, and you can look in whatever, the top billionaires or whatever, these guys are worth $80 billion. Now, these women, you know, the lawsuit could have involved 1.6 million women. Not, see, just, you know, people use this term, just throw terms around, women. Now, you're not talking about, you understand, you're talking about mothers. You're talking about mothers, wives, people out there who are struggling, scuffling with Walmart. I mean, packing, unpacking crates, walking on the concrete all day, arthritis, feet hurting, all different, and not even having enough insurance. 5-4 decision, 5-4. Two more votes, one more vote would have made a difference. 5-4, could have been 5-4 the other way. But no, we don't want to vote. I don't want to vote. You know, can you afford not to? I mean, this is in your hands. You know what I'm saying? This is in your hands. But anyway, the lawsuit, okay. Now the handful of women who brought the class may pursue their claims on their own. Do they have the resources? Are there enough pro bono lawyers to compete with Walmart? $80 billion worth of 15 different siblings of Mr. Sam Walton, with much less money at stake and less pressure on Walmart to settle. Get it? Two of the named plaintiffs, Christine Kwapnoski and Betty Dukes, attended the argument. Kwapnoski is an assistant manager at Sam's Club in Concord, California. Dukes is a greeter at Walmart in Pittsburgh, California. In a statement, Walmart said, the court today unanimously rejected class action certification, and as the majority made it clear, the plaintiff's claims were worlds away from showing a company-wide discriminatory pay and promotion policy, unquote. Dukes and Kwapnoski said they were disappointed in the ruling but vowed to push ahead with their claims. Both women spoke on a conference call with reporters. We still are determined to go forward to present our case in court. We believe we will prevail there, Dukes said. All I have to say is that when I get back to work tomorrow, I'm going to let them know we are still fighting, Kwapnoski said. Marcia D. Greenberger, a co-president of the United Women's Law Center, said the court has told, quote-unquote, told employers that they can rest easy, knowing that the bigger and more powerful they are, the less likely their employees will be able to join together to secure their rights. The high court's majority agreed with Walmart's argument that being forced to defend the treatment of female employees, regardless of the jobs they hold or where they work, is unfair. Justice, listen, this dude drives me batty. I cannot, but he can be moved. He can be moved if you vote right. He can be moved. Justice Antonin Scalia's opinion of the court's conservative majority, and the way I spell conservative is KKKONSERVATIVE, as in Herman Cain, KKKAIN. Anyway, the court's conservative majority said there needed to be a common element of tying together literally millions of employment decisions at once. But Scalia, who took money from the teabaggers, said, and the Koch brothers, said that in the lawsuit against the nation's largest private employer, that it's entirely absent here. Oh, my God. Mr. Scalia, did you really see it was absent? Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, writing for the court's four liberal justices. We need one more, two more. How about nine? I said there was more than enough uniting the claims. Walmart's delegation of discretion over pay and promotions is a policy uniform throughout all stores, Ginsburg said. Quote, unquote. Business interests lined up. Business interests, of course they lined up with Walmart. Why wouldn't they? While civil rights. You see, this civil rights thing that people thought in the 60s was a black thing, now it's a woman's thing. In Wisconsin, it was a teacher's thing. You see, civil rights is nothing to be scoffed at when it's yours getting taken away. Women's and consumer groups have sided with the women plaintiffs, as we all should side with the women plaintiffs, because there are mothers out there, sisters out there, struggling, trying to make it, and these guys are wanting to cut back. But anyway, let me finish. Both sides have painted the case as extremely consequential. The business community has said that a ruling for the women who lead to a floor that the ruling for the women would lead to a flood of class action lawsuits based on vague. Hey, I'm a brother. I'm a black dude. I've been with the company that I work for 33 years, and if you want to tell me that I don't know what discrimination is, you are absolutely out of your mind. So I'm 100% behind these sisters, these women. Supporters for the women's feature feared that a decision in favor of Walmart could remove a valuable weapon for fighting all sorts of discrimination, as it should be. Discrimination should be disintegrated, you see? But it's so entrenched and ingrained and entrained in the psyche of these United States that it's going to be difficult, not impossible, just difficult to eradicate. Anyway, said Greensburg, the women of Walmart, together with women everywhere, will now face a far steeper road to challenge and correct pay and other forms of discrimination in the workplace. The lawsuit, citing what are now dated figures from 2001, said the women are grossly underrepresented among managers. The lawsuit, citing what are now dated figures from 2001, said women are grossly underrepresented among managers, holding just 14% of store managers' positions compared to more than 80% of the lower-ranking supervisory jobs that are paid by the hour. Walmart responded that women in its retail stores made up two-thirds of all employees and two-thirds of all managers in 2001. The company also has said its policies prohibit discrimination, discrimination, and that it's taken steps, of course, since the suit was filed to address problems including posting jobs, openings electronically. Wow. What can you say? I mean, you know, see, for years and years, people did not understand. Oh, I saw this, but she's put in there about Van Jones. I need to talk with you because I just started following him on Twitter, whatever you call it. I don't know how to do that stuff. Sister Indy declared, do you twit? I think I'm BLAK capital B, little LAK underscore capital ICZ at Twitter.com. If any of you want to holler at me, just holler at me on Twitter. Or you can call me 347-945-7040. Or you can contact me by email at blakicz.1@gmail.com. And we'll be more than happy to converse with you on any subjects that you might feel are near and dear to your heart. You know, I really appreciate, there are a few people that listen to me on archives, and let me tell you that I really appreciate you doing so. And I do a little bit of blogging, but again, I want to, let me tell you, because I'm on once a week, but my sis Indy Declare, Miss Indy Declare, is on 5 days a week. And you will have more than an opportunity to express your opinion on her show. And she comes on Blog Talk Radio, INDIA. I don't know if she's changed that or not. I believe it's going to be the same. Just spoken. Yes, you got to. You got to bookmark it. Lacey says she bookmarked it. And I'm glad you did, because I guarantee you it'll be well worth your time, because sis does tremendously more than I do, but she's she got the real raw right now. And I mean, that's what I'm telling you, it's the real raw right now, and it's enjoyable, it's thrilling, exciting, motivating, very, very provocative, and she allows you to provide your input, and as well as I will get to mentioning a few more individuals that I do have a chance on occasion to listen to, and I'm tremendously gratified and humbled to be and honored to be associated to any degree with a guest and host, with the host on a Blog Talk Radio. I think this is a phenomenal opportunity for a lot of us to join together and to find some common ground, and once again to join together that when our neighborhoods were kind of, and I hope that people are beginning to see it, you know, we as a cultural group feel comfortable. I feel very comfortable, and I don't have a problem at all enjoying. And as a matter of fact, there are some ladies, I think it's Sport Justice now, that I had a chance to meet or at least visit with on the phone, and I invite them, everyone, to be a part of what I do here. And those ladies, For Justice Now, I believe, what they do is they assist people, ladies who are currently incarcerated and who were formerly incarcerated, and ladies in general. And the reason that, let me tell you, the reason that I talk about ladies, I'm going to tell you why that I talk about women, ladies, and is because I was raised by my grandmother, great-grandmother, mother, aunt, and a lot of other ladies in the community. And let me give you my impression. I was born in the 50s, and I'm 59 years old. There weren't a lot of jobs available for men of African descent in a lot of communities. There were always my grandmother and great-grandmother ran a laundry, which I didn't realize at the time, but as I've thought about it, as I've gotten older, they were entrepreneurs. They ran a laundry. They were, self-employed. And they also did maid work, you know. So this was my initial history. From the time I was old enough to walk and talk and look, I saw these old ladies hanging clothes out on the clothesline when it was as hot as it's been here, and when it's as cold as it's ever been, because they had to make a living, and they did make a living. I can remember those old ladies with money tied in their handkerchief. I can remember those little squeeze clip purses that my great grandma. I can remember them wearing aprons and holes in their dresses, and they always wore dresses and they always wore their old stockings that had runners in them every day because they wanted to save their best. And I remember them quilting. I remember, let me tell you why my mom's single, a female head of household. Why do I talk about women? Because. That's because. Yeah, I'm a product. And I'll go down to the last, you know. But what we have to understand, I think, is that culturally, the European women thought that they were exempt. When they take anybody's civil rights, look in your back pocket because they're going to be after yours next. That's why I don't like Cantor. Don't like them. Don't like Republicans at all. I don't like Republicans. And I'm sorry, and if it ever comes to the point in time when I, you know, get commercially viable, if I ever do, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just going to tell them straight up. That's just the way I roll. I'm 100% Democrat, period. No ifs, ands, and buts, no qualifications. Just know that about me. And, again, if you ever want to give me a call, please feel free to do so, 347-945-7040. And tell you what, we're going to be right back after a brief interlude. And please stick around. We got a few more things to talk about before the show's over. 52 minutes right now, past 7 p.m., 8 before 8. We'll be right back right after this.
SMART Incorporated. Single mothers are really trying. SMART Incorporated is a nonprofit organization that provides reentry and residential rehabilitation services to people suffering from addictions and co-occurring disorders. Our goal is to help women improve health and wellness, reduce risk of addiction relapse, STDs, and violence. We also help to improve self-sufficiency, build and sustain healthy relationships, and strengthen families. SMART houses women and their children who are reentering from the forensic system or that are in need of addiction treatment. Our purpose, SMART, Single Mothers Are Really Trying, desires to make a footprint and take leadership in providing services to disadvantaged mothers and children. Temporary shelter as well as other support services will be offered to women with children who are homeless, recovering from addictions, victims of spousal abuse, ex-felons, or otherwise economically disadvantaged. No matter where your past has been, your future is spotless.
Thinking about all the things that I could do. I'm looking at you in this bed, knowing there's a lot of things I would like to do. But I don't wanna do nothing, babe. I just wanna feel your body, babe. Tonight it's all about you. Oh, so I hope tonight, girl, ain't asking for too much. We can watch some movies, or baby, we can just cuddle up. Girl, I'm glad that you're here with me.
Here with me.
Baby, let's make history.
Make history.
Tonight, let's keep it sex free.
We don't have to have sex tonight. I just want your body next to mine. So step into this room. Tonight, it's all about you. Girl, let's keep sex tonight.
Oh. I never thought for once that it'll be going down this way. But the love I have for you mean more than sex and every day. Let me cook you some dinner, babe. Get dressed in your lingerie. Tonight it's all about you. Oh, we can play some slow jams, just chill and have a drink, babe. Hennessy for me and here's some curveball for you, my dear. I'm so glad that you're here with me.
Here with me.
Baby, let's make history. free. Tonight, let's keep it sex free.
We don't have sex tonight.
Whoa.
I just want your body next to mine.
Next to mine, babe.
So step into this room. Tonight, it's all about you. Girl, let's keep sex tonight.
Yeah. Baby, here's what we gonna do. We gon' step into this room and then turn on some music. Oh, tonight was made for you to cuddle up and watch some movies. There's nothing I'd rather do. Let's keep it sex free. Let's keep it sex free. Whoa. Let's keep it sex free. Oh, let's keep it sex free. Girl,
we don't have sex tonight.
Oh no,
I just want your body next to mine.
Right here, babe.
So step into this room.
Oh.
Tonight it's all about you.
You,
girl, let's.
Outside, mostly clear skies. Wish it would cloud up. Hadn't rained since last August out here in the west part of Texas. But anyway, would like to continue on with our conversation. And I found another article. This particular article is going to be from Al Franken. He's a U.S. Senator from Minnesota. And I found this also in the Huffington Post. And this is posted 6/23, 2011 at 2:49 p.m. Eastern Time. And what he speaks about is fighting for America's middle class. Netroots Nation, 2011. And, before I do that, let me mention this right quick. I was talking about Reverend Al Sharpton and the National Action Network. And it says, join NAN, National Action Network, for the August 27th march and rally in Washington. Let the masses be a part of the opening of the King Monument and stand for poor and working class people. So that'll be August 27th. And the rally will be rally on Washington. And there is information on National Area Network's website in www.nationalareanetwork.net if you have any interest, which I'm, there are a lot of people planning to be there, as I understand it. I'm hoping, wishing that I could be there. I would love to be there and share in that. That's going to be a historical moment. Again, he doctor. Martin Luther King wasn't a president. and on a two other monuments, the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Monument, and Dr. Martin Luther King. And I think that his efforts were tremendously significant. And people say, oh, it's just for, you know, the certain kind of people. No, it's for the Constitution of the United States. It's like, you know, Abraham Lincoln, oh, he just fought the war to free the slaves. No, he fought the war for the United States to live up to all men are created equal. That's what it wasn't about. Oh, it's just for them. No, it's American black citizens, C-I-T-I-Z-E-N-S, citizens of the United States. You know what? Bill Gates is worth around $54 billion. I'm worth quite a considerable amount less than that. But Bill Gates is a citizen. I'm a citizen. 24 hours in his day, 24 hours in my day. He has one vote. I have one vote. See, on a lot of levels, Bill Gates and myself, we're equal. And I have almost as much influence as Gates in a lot of areas. And these are the things that I tend to focus on. I don't tend to focus on how is he much better than me. I tend to focus on how are we somewhat similar and what can I do to provide my input and emphasis and support for different situations that are going to benefit the masses, not the few. That's where I differ from Herman Cain and the Republican Party, is I want to benefit the masses. See, there are tremendously more people of lesser financial standing than there are those of tremendously just bountiful and abundant financial standing. But those people have purported that there is an ideology that, you know, financial resources suggest that I'm more intelligent and I should be in control. No. You're not in control of me. You have more money than I do. You may be able to sling a few bucks around, but you see, we can form a coalition that slings votes around, and votes are what gets people elected. I don't care how much advertising. All the people, for instance, that fell for the okey-doke in 2010, I'm not going to vote for Obama because he wasn't for LGBT. You know, I'm not going to vote for Obama because, like, this guy Lewis, let me see, who is he? I'm so sick of this guy. This Lewis Gutierrez. I'm not going to vote for Obama because he wasn't for the Hispanics, you know. Well, who's better for the Hispanics, maybe? Maybe Pawlenty. Maybe Mitt Romney. Maybe Santorum. Maybe who else is up there? Ron Paul. I don't, you know, Herman Cain, Bachman, whomever. You know, maybe there are more well attuned to your feelings, to your ideas, you know. I'm not going to support him. Yeah, okay, well then let them get more of their congressional individuals, because Republicans don't give a damn what you think. They're going to vote block. They're going to vote lockstep, and they're going to keep putting guys in there that's going to obstruct your goals. LGBT, Mr. Choi, your goals. Miss Rachel Maddow, they're going to put people in there that's going to be obstructionist for your goals. You know, you can sit up and try to, you know, castigate President Obama, but there's one thing I'm going to tell you: when you put a Congress in there that's filibuster-proof Senate, and a Congress in there that's majority Democrat, then they can get people out of committee and get them voted on and get them passed and get bills passed. The Republicans haven't passed one goddamn bill. They didn't pass a damn bill for. They didn't pass a bill for jobs. They haven't passed a bill for a debt ceiling. They haven't passed a bill for one damn thing. Well, the president needs to talk to us. There's 435 of y'all. Talk amongst yourselves. Get something done. Well, the president needs to come. You know, how can these people continually castigate the president of the United States? This dude knocked off Bin Laden, which Bush tried for 8 years. He's trying to draw down troops in Afghanistan, which is where we should have been initially. Taking people out of Iraq. He stopped the loss of jobs of 780,000 jobs a month in December, the month before he went into office. He bailed out Wall Street, bailed out insurance companies, bailed out auto industries, and kept jobs. See, people think, oh, well, you know, you just saved Chrysler or GM. No, but don't you understand? Don't just think of this for a second. There are people that make the blinker handles. The people that make the steering wheels, the steering columns, the knob for the radios, as simple as that may be, the caps that go on your valve stems, your spark plug wires, carburetors, the carburetor filters. I mean, when you want to just let a GM fold, can you imagine the ripple effect? Can you just imagine the ripple effect? Because there are people who drive little bitty trucks and vans that deliver these parts to get paid. The people that use those gas filters and oil filters and oil lubricants and that stop to get gas and get a little bit of food here or there. I mean, when you shut down one darn industry, these, you know, well, LGBT, well, you don't want me to, you know, Obama, you know, like, it's one of you, and there's mothers out there that's got five children, and so I'm supposed to just, oh, roll over for you? Oh, you don't want to vote for Obama? Please don't. Please don't. You know, oh, you don't want to help. You know, can you imagine if Africa was right? I live in Texas. I'm down here not far from the border. Can you imagine what it would be like if Africa was right down here? Oh, well, you know, and you're going to run some stuff? I can remember driver licenses. And so a lot of people don't know this. I'm going to tell you. So I can remember driver licenses when there were only two designations on a driver license. It had no picture, no photograph. It just had typing on it. I got one. I had one. And on those were two designations, N and W, Negro and white. And there were no other groups of people associated with Negro except people of African descent. Hispanics were considered white. You see, so, I mean, don't, you know, run the game on somebody. Play with some kids. Don't play with me. I'm not a kid to be played with like that. But anyway, talking about Al Franken, fighting for America's middle class, a whole bunch of people. On Saturday, June 18th, I was given the honor of speaking to the Netroots Nation 2011 in Minneapolis, the 6th Annual Convention of Progressive Grassroots Leaders and Activists. I was the opening speaker at Saturday morning's keynote session, which focused on how to save the middle class and build progressive infrastructure. I am not a progressive. Let me stop and tell you that. I am a Democrat, 100%, period. I had an amazing time at the conference and met a ton of passionate activists and progressives, and those passionate activists and progressives turned their back on the Democrat Party in 2010 and allowed the Republicans to take control of the House. So I am not a progressive, and I'm not one of these activists. I'm 100% every day fully committed 24/7 to being a Democrat, and I will not turn my back on the damn party. We were enslaved for years, and we didn't turn our back on the party. We hung with it. And now these, oh, I can't get this, I can't get that. You won't get out of Afghanistan. You know what? Let me stop just a second. Yeah, let's pull out of Afghanistan. You know, Pakistan has nuclear weapons. Pakistan's army is so freaking fragile. Can you imagine if Al-Qaeda set up in Afghanistan and went across and whipped Pakistan's butt and got those nuclear weapons? You want out of Afghanistan? You feel good about it, because I'm going to tell you, you're going to hear it. If I live to see it and anything happens, I'm going to remind you. You want out of Afghanistan. You get out of Afghanistan. You bring the soldiers here back to the United States of America. They're going to discharge, and they're going to need some jobs, and yours just might be one of them. So the idea for me is simply this. that Pakistan is a nuclear power. It has nuclear weapons. Al-Qaeda and Taliban are sworn against the United States of America, terrorist organizations, and if they get their hands on just one nuclear weapon, and there is Iran, you're going to see some changes being made. So you may get your wish. I mean, you want to force, well, Obama won't get out. Obama said he was going to get out. Obama's just taking fire. Tell you, President, you know, and I listen to these Matt Owls and things. Well, you know, the president did, you know. I guess she has the intelligence reports that President Obama has. I'm sure that she does, or else she wouldn't be making these statements. I'm sure that all of you, because, see, all these guys do, well, I made a mistake. I was wrong. This dude's got the whole world on his shoulders. It's more than just a bet. It's more than just, you know, well, I think, you know. Yeah, well, okay, you're a big, fabulous, highly paid news commentator on the corporate media. Anyway, let me finish. It was fitting that Netroots Nation was in Minnesota this year. Minnesota is a state that sent Hubert Humphrey to the United States, the United States Senate, where he cheerfully weighs an unusually and usually won great battles in the name of the young and the old, the poor people and vulnerable, the oppressed and disenfranchised. It was a state where Walter Mondale rose to become the living embodiment of a common sense Midwestern progressive values. And it's the state where Paul Wellstone became my hero. This is a quote of Al Franken. And the hero of the generations of progressives who believed, as he did, that we all do better. These Minnesotans were instrumental in establishing the America we know and love today, from building the social safety net to establishing workers' rights to investing in our manufacturing sector. They helped build the middle class, and defending those progressive values is crucial to saving the middle class today. My speech entitled, this is, again, Al Franken, The Attack on America's Middle Class and the Plan to Fight Back, unquote, laid out some ideas on what we can do to preserve these values and began as progressives, but have become simply American. The full value of the video is here if you want to look at it. It's on the Huffington Post. The Attack on America's Middle Class and the Plan to Fight Back. Netroots Nation 2011, welcome to Minnesota. This is the state that sent Hubert Humphrey, This is the state that sent Hubert Humphrey, the middle-class son of pharmacists, to the United States Senate, where he cheerfully weighs and usually won great battles in the name of young, old, the poor, vulnerable, and the oppressed, disenfranchised. This state, okay, where he's repeating this. Okay, this state is where Walter Mondale, who at the age of 20 had helped to organize Humphrey's first Senate campaign, rose to become a living embodiment of common sense Midwestern progressive values. And this is the state where Paul Wellstone, a professor down at Carleton College in Northfield, became my hero and the hero of Generation Progressive, who believed, as he did, we all do better when we all do better. We all do better when we all have health care. We all do better when we all get good education. We all do better when we all earn a fair wage at a good job. We all do better when we all find a good home and economic security and justice when we're wronged. Today, 100 years after Hubert Humphrey was born, nearly half a century after Walter Mondale began his legendary career in public service, and 2 decades after Paul Wellstone won his first race for the Senate, we gather in Minnesota to take stock. We all believe that we all do better when we all do better. The question is, how are we doing? As if we're talking about the fate of ordinary families, the answer is clear. We're losing. The American middle class is in trouble. Median family income is down. Jobs are scarce. Opportunities people thought they'd earn through hard work are disappearing before their eyes. Working families are failing, are falling further and further behind. And that means it's hard for progressives not to feel like we're losing too. Our movement is about putting the concerns of those working Americans at the forefront of our national agenda. Now, you can argue the Democrats in Congress should be doing more to win legislative battles, although as someone who is in the room every day, I can tell you that I don't doubt for a second my colleagues' commitment to moving our country in the right direction. And you can argue that the Democratic Party should be using different tactics to win elections. But the fact remains, we as a progressive movement are losing the argument on issue after issue. We're playing defense. We're ready to fight for cap and trade, but instead we're forced into the argument about whether global warming even exists. We're ready to fight for Employee Free Choice Act, but instead we're forced into an argument about whether workers should have any rights at all. As proud as we are, as we all are, of the fight our movement has shown in Wisconsin and around the country in the face of Republican efforts to end collective bargaining, we know that these aren't the conversations we should be having in the year 2011. And instead of having a debate about what the government should be doing to help the struggling middle class, we're having a debate about what part of the social safety net we should sacrifice in order to preserve and extend giveaways to the wealthiest few and to well-connected corporations. We can urge Democrats in Congress to stand stronger when Republicans hold our government hostage. We can urge each other to work harder to win elections. And you won't hear any disagreement from me on either count. But if we're going to win the fights, we have to start by reclaiming the upper hand in the argument over what our country should be about. And I want to suggest that conservatives might just have given us the playbook. For decades, their argument against progressive policies hasn't just been about the substance of our ideas, but about the scope of our vision. They call us radicals. They say we want to do too much, too fast. They accuse us of wanting to remake the fundamental fabric of American society as if we were proposing to rip a few dozen stars off the flag. They understand that Americans don't like radical change. We love our country and are rightly proud of its traditions. We revere our past. And it's easy to offer a return to the good old days, when the economy was growing, everyone was optimistic, and we went to bed at night secure in the knowledge of our kids would have better opportunity than we had. What conservatives miss when they talk about the good old days, of course, is that they were good for a reason. Some of you might have heard, this is, again, Al Franken, some of you might have heard me talk about my childhood here in Minnesota. My dad never graduated high school. He was a printing salesman. We lived in a two-bedroom, one-bath house in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. We weren't rich, but we felt secure. I felt like the luckiest kid in the world, and I was. I was growing up in the middle class in a time when growing up middle class in America meant there would be jobs for my parents, good schools for me to prepare myself for a career. And if I worked hard and played by the rules, a chance for me to do anything I wanted, including being a comedy writer and senator, and then a senator, in that order. Between 1947 and 1977, we experienced three decades of incredible growth, growth that flowed to the middle class. As we grew together. Everyone benefited. Income for the top fifth of Americans grew by 99%, and income for those at the bottom fifth grew by 116%. I know that's hard to believe. The wages of the bottom fifth grew more than the wages of the top fifth. Really, that happened. Meanwhile, the middle class could afford to buy more, so there was more demand. Demand, key word. That meant there were more jobs. And with the tax dollars that came from all this growth, the government built 40,000 miles of straight freeways that greatly reduced the cost of transporting goods, invested in education that prepared kids for the workforce, and innovations that created entire new industries and strengthened the social safety net so that everyone could aspire to the middle class. Oh, and we sent a man to the moon, actually a number of them, which brings me to my wife. And this, again, is Al Franken, which brings me to my wife, Franny. When she was 17 months old, her dad, a decorated war veteran, World War II, died in a car accident, leaving my future mother-in-law widowed at age 29 with five kids. The family made it because of Social Security survivor benefits. Every single one of the four girls in Franny's family went to college thanks to Pell Grants and other scholarships. my brother-in-law, Neil, went to the Coast Guard, where he became an electrical engineer. My mother-in-law got herself a $300 GI loan to fix her roof, used the money instead to go to the University of Maine. She became a grade school teacher and taught poor kids, and her loans were forgiven. She and all five of those kids became productive members of society. They pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, but first they had to have boots, and the government gave Franny's family the boots. These are stories about security and opportunity. These are stories about the American dream. These are stories about the country we are so proud to call our own, the one we all want to protect and preserve. But they are also stories about a progressive America, one in which the government adopts the principle that we all do better when we all do better. It was our vision that government should be in the business of making things, and that we should invest in innovations and infrastructure so that we could have an economy where there is enough for everyone. It was our vision that American workers should earn enough to buy what they produced. It was our vision that everyone have basic rights at work, no matter how powerful their employer, and that law should be a place where anyone could turn for justice. And although the vision has always remained in a work in progress, Hubert Humphrey and Walter Mondale and Paul Wellstone and generations of progressives made this country what we dreamed it could be for millions and millions of families. And while our vision was broad, the policies we fought for the social safety net, to workers' rights, to investments in the manufacturing sector, were grounded in the values that began as progressive but have become simply American. And having built that America we're also proud of, it's now up to us to save it. Progressives, in a way, are the new conservatives. We want to conserve what we fought to build, and the right-wingers who call themselves conservatives are the ones who want radical change in the way our government works and the way our country works. Newt Gingrich went on Meet the Press last month and said that the Ryan plan to end Medicare was right-wing social engineering. That it was too big to jump. He has spent the month since apologizing, but for once in his life, Newt was right. Actually, that's not fair. He was calling for electronic medical records years before the rest of the country got on board with the idea. So he was right the one other time. Got to give a guy credit. But ending Medicare, like privatizing Social Security, is astonishingly radical. Part of the middle class promises that after a lifetime of hard work, you'll be able to retire and enjoy the fruits of your labor. Medicare was established to secure that promise. There was no private insurance market for people over 65 back in 1964. If the Republicans destroy Medicare, there won't be one now. The average Social Security benefit is $15,000. The average out-of-pocket health care cost for the seniors under the Ryan plan would be over $12,000. So if the Republicans eliminate Medicare, America will become a country in which you can never retire, and once you physically can no longer work, you are desperately poor until you die. That is a radical change to our society. The Republican agenda is a radical vision in which Medicaid is slashed to the bone, in which we start to balance the budget on the backs of literally our most vulnerable citizens. Say you have a parent who suffers from dementia and lives in a nursing home. If Republicans pass these Medicaid cuts, you'd be ready to take that parent in. This is a radical change to our society. The Republican vision is one in which we cut billions from job training and education and infrastructure, the things that enable ordinary Americans to find good jobs, enable businesses to find the customers, and train workers they need to grow, and enable middle-class families to build real economic security. All these cuts just to fund more tax cuts for people who are richer than any people have ever been in the history of the world. It's a vision in which workers have no protections from their employers. Ordinary Americans have no access to the courts when they're wronged, and big corporations control everything from our media to the internet to our democracy. After decades of fighting against any interpretation of the Constitution that secured basic rights for all Americans, conservatives have somehow found in that text special First Amendment right for oil companies. The growing gap between rich and poor, the failure of our generations to leave our kids the America we inherited from our parents, and the inability of our political system to respond to these crises. For today's Republican Party, these are features, not bugs. The right wants America to be a nation of social Darwinism, in which the powerful are protected by the government and the rest of us are on our own. To achieve it, they'll say things they know aren't true, disown ideas they used to support, contradict themselves on everything from how the legislative process should operate to how weather works. They'll let the government shut down, let us default on our debts, bring our country to its knees to fulfill their ideological fervor. So how do we stop them? Well, I haven't been in politics my whole life. And again, this is Al Franken. I haven't been in politics my whole life, but I think we always win when we work together and stand on our values. Medicare and Medicaid and the investment in infrastructure and public education and workers' rights and civil rights and equal rights under the law, these aren't just good progressive ideas. These are examples of traditional American values. And when Republicans talk about destroying these things, they're talking about turning their backs on the America we built. They're talking about ripping apart the fabric of our society. They're talking about a transformation of our country, about undermining our traditions so radically they might as well be tearing stars off the flags. And we should say so. Here in the home of Humphrey Mondale Wellstone, I urge you all to stand up for the America our movement helped to build. Stand up for the principle that we should grow together instead of growing apart. Stand up for the principle that we all do better when we all do better. Be proud to stand for Medicare and Medicaid. Be proud to stand with workers. Be proud to stand for a government that invests in America, a legal system that respects the rights of all individuals and the progressive values we fought so hard to defend. Be proud of who we are and what we built. We have a tough fight ahead, but it's one we have to win. It's not just Democratic Party that's depending on us. It's the American middle class. And it's the American tradition, one that we helped to create and one that we must now protect. And he ends by saying, thank you. And that was Al Franken. And I want to tell you, I really appreciate you being here. I wish I had more time to spend with you, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to go. And I want to thank Sister Lacey, my dear Sister Lacey, my dear Sister India Declare, guest 46723, 60 seconds to go, and I want to tell you, if you ever want to contact us, please, 347-945-7040, or blakicz.1@gmail.com, or Twitter me at BLAK_ICZ, the LAK is little, and the I is big, and the CZ, and at twitter.com. Sister India Declare, listen to her on Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, and that's 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. I want to say, hey, peace, respect, high regard. Blessings to you and yours from me and mine. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you again, hopefully next week. Right now, this is Black Ice of Black Ice and Friends signing off with this.
Yeah. I see no changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about her needs, bro. Pull a trigger, kill a nigga, he's a hero. Get a crack to the kids, who the hell cares? One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship them, don't let them deal with brothers. Give them guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother that are two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can it never take a brother if you're close to me? I let it go back to when we played with kids with things.
That's the way it is.
I wonder what it takes to make this one better place. Let's erase the waste. Take the evil out the people, they'll be acting right. They're both black and white, smoking crack tonight. And the only time we chill is when we kill each other. It takes skills to be real time to heal each other. And as always, things ever sick, we ain't ready to see a black man sick. It ain't a secret of the field of black. The penitentiary black, and it's filled with black. But some things will never change. I know another way for the ringing in the dope. Now tell me what's the mother to do. Be a real daughter, build to the brother in you. You gotta operate the easy way. Put the maiden in a sleazy way. Sell a crack to the key.
Wait, what's the work? So it's on us to do what we gotta do to survive.